Welcome back to Backstage, where we talk about what's going on behind the scenes here at Relay FM and share our knowledge with you to help you start your own podcast. My name is Mike Hurley, and I am joined by Relay FM co-founder, Mr. Stephen Hackett.
Hello, Relay FM co-founder Mike Hurley.
Hello. What's going on at Relay FM? I'm good, but what's happening here? Can you tell me? I've been away for a while, I suppose. Can you fill me in?
We've ended a six-year battle.
Yep.
Is what we've done. Mm-hmm. So when we finally decided on the name of the company, which we've told that story before, it was hellacious. We got to get a Twitter handle. And it turned out at Relay FM had already been taken. But to make matters worse, the account was suspended. So we couldn't use it. And we tried...
Unused.
Tried contacting Twitter. Once we had our trademark, tried contacting Twitter again. Nothing happened. I tried a few times over the years, like go through the process. But then you used your social media influencer status and got us the handle.
No, we spoke about it here.
Here?
Yeah, we spoke about it on Backstage.
I think you spoke about it on Cortex. Was it here?
We were just talking about branding on the last episode, right?
Oh, it was here. I thought it was on Cortex.
Yeah, and I told the story here, and then a unnamed but heroic Relay FM member reached out to me, and they work at a company that sells birds, and they got it all sorted out for us. So we are now the proud owners of at Relay FM, finally.
Woo!
So no more underscore, which is what I said in the Slack, and immediately felt bad about it. Tried to change it, and underscore still felt like we kicked him out.
Yep. Sorry, Dave. So,
sorry, Dave. We have ended the tyranny of the underscore.
That's right.
Finally. We are going to talk about editing this time.
Oh, boy.
We got a lot of questions from members in the Relay FM members Discord, which you should be a part of if you're not already. You can check previous email communications from us if you want a link to sign up. Some of these questions are technical, some are theoretical, and that is like the whole thing about editing. Some of the questions are kind of, what are your thoughts on this? And some of the questions are, how exactly do you do this? And the questions we have are a real mix of those things today.
And so thinking about how to do this, because it is hard to talk about, in the show notes will be a link to a video, which is me editing this very podcast you're listening to, and me walking through the process that we're going to talk about some today, but some of it is just, it's just so hard to talk about. So that video will be obviously longer than the podcast episode, but if you want to listen to that that way, along with my commentary on things that I'm doing, that may be a fun way to do this.
You know, it's a specific set of tools and stuff being used, but the basics of how Stephen edits will be of use to you. I will just say, this, one of the other things is everybody edits differently.
Yes.
So kind of from today, from what we're going to talk about, and from when you watch that video, take what we say as guidelines, not rules. About what you should use and how you should do it, because
right,
even between the two of us, I'm sure we're going to get into it today, there are some things that we fundamentally disagree on when it comes to how podcasts are edited. I do have like a little opening diatribe that I would like to give.
Ooh.
Before we get into the questions.
Diatribe sounds scary. Are we in trouble?
Here's the thing about this. I have a podcast mentorship group that I have been running for the last 7 months or so, where I have a group of 8 or 9 people, and they're trying to get their podcast off the ground. And this is the thing that I started doing. And our last month's call was about podcast editing. It's interesting to me. Backstage has both helped me prepare for the mentorship calls, and the mentorship calls sometimes help me prepare for Backstage, depending on where we are in the process. And on these calls, I give what we have jokingly as a group dubbed as like my lecture portion, where I just talk for a bunch about a thing, and then we will talk about it together. So I'm kind of like getting my knowledge out. So what you're hearing here is a section of what I put together for my mentorship call. So will you allow me a minute or two?
Yes, please.
All right. So editing a podcast is a subjective thing. There are basics that can be taught. You can be taught the keyboard shortcuts. You can be taught how to use different tools and different software editors and stuff like that. You could watch your YouTube videos. You can watch for the videos Stephen's going to make. But the way that you end up editing a podcast and the amount that you edit it comes to personal taste. I also feel like there is an art in podcast editing. So this may make some people roll their eyes, but I'm going to use this analogy anyway because I like to do it. I almost feel it's kind of a little bit like sculpture. So you have a amount of material and you take material away from it until you're left with the end result. That's kind of how I think about editing a podcast. While this can be time-consuming, I do recommend listening back to your show while you edit it. It will allow you to find ways that you can improve the show itself, what works and what doesn't, especially if you're new. Like I recommend that to people when they're starting out, right? Even if you don't intend to really heavily edit, you should just listen back to it while you're editing it anyway to begin with, so you can kind of get to grips with it. One thing that people think that you need to do is remove every or breath. Do not do this. This is a bad, bad, bad idea. Do not do it. Take out ones that aren't needed. You can take out ones that are, if someone's doing it a bunch, maybe they have some filler words and stuff. But these kinds of noises are natural in speech. And if you remove them all, you're left with something that sounds quite unnatural. As well, a lot of the time, people kind of bridge a word into an or an and you can't remove it. So do not be so aggressive about it. They're allowed to be in there. People aren't going to go wild. But for example, if I do that, Stephen could have removed that. He's not going to remove it because it won't make my point in the edit.
But the power is mine.
They're the kinds of ones that you can take out quite easily. But if I talk like that, he can't take that out without it sounding weird. Don't worry about it. It's fine. You do not need to remove them all. Do not use AI tools that try and remove all of these things because it will sound unnatural.
Yeah, I agree with you. I generally take out the ones that are really bad or someone's searching for the next word and they're like, like, you know, I'll take that out almost every time. It's like right there. See, I got, while I was thinking about what to say next. It is natural. You've got to find the balance. I've got one person that I edit who will remain nameless, who makes a very loud breathing in noise. And I take out what I can because it's gross, but sometimes they stay in because you can't fix it.
Can you give me an example of what this sounds like?
Let's see if I can do it. So they're...
Okay.
So Mike, let's talk about editing.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And I get rid of as many as I can. They leave a little break on either side of it, so it's pretty easy to clip out, but it's time consuming.
I edit in one of three with different ways. And I have all of these as options that I use every week. One of these is a note-taking edit. This is, do not start with this because this requires practice. It's my favorite way to edit because it is the most effective for the time that you put into it. But you need to be able to multitask while doing it. So while I'm recording a show, my primary example of this is Upgrade, which I host with Jason Snell. While me and Jason are recording, if we talk over each other egregiously, if we have to restate something, if some edit needs to be made of some kind, maybe somebody said something wrong, I am writing all these notes down with time codes, and I've kind of developed my own shorthand. So once we're done editing, I put these files into my editor and I go through each time code and clean things up. There are a lot of like really weird things that you need to do to make this right, like editing in reverse. So instead of pulling things from the left, you pull them from the right. Don't worry about what I just said. What I'm saying to you is you need to have experience in editing to be able to do something like this properly, because you kind of have to learn the basics first, I think, before you can try and do something like this. It is more complicated to edit this way because you have to be very careful about not getting your files out of sync and then your time codes don't match up anymore, right?
So that's right.
You have to be very particular with it. But once you've got some experience, like this is something that you can make work for you. And I find this to be, this kind of is a, it's not, I wouldn't say it's in the middle in output of no editing and really fine grain editing. But I think it's like in time, it's about halfway through in time, but you get a much better end result from it, I think.
I really struggle to edit this way because I find it difficult to take notes when I'm recording. I just can't quite multitask that well. And for me, at least, when I've tried it, I have missed things. And so it doesn't quite work for me the way it works for you.
This is a very different thing. I don't know if many other people do this. I just developed it over time, but it took me years to be able to get to the point where I felt like I was confident in doing it, and then took me a lot of practice to be able to do this effectively. It isn't something that I've always been able to do. The last kind of version of this is the like fine detail edit. This is very time consuming. You will get the best result out of it, and you'll learn the most. This is, you are listening back to the show and you're fixing things as you go, right? Like you start and you go, oh, fix that. This is where you're going to do the most editing for sure. Like, even if I'm trying to just be light when I'm doing this, I can't help myself, right? Because you're hearing every little problem. That is when, like, the really kind of fine detail edit. I said last, but I said there were three because the third one is you pay someone.
That's so not the first you two, editing. It's someone else editing.
Exactly. The first two is you doing it, but there is another option, and there's another option that me and you both take advantage of, is paying somebody. Obviously, there's a cost to do it, or it may be not paying someone, but you've got a friend that wants to get better at it and you give it to them. I would recommend making it a business arrangement, working with somebody who has some skill, and also then you're paying somebody for their work, their art, and time. It is an option that is becoming more and more feasible over time because there are more people that want to make a living from this. So you can get a pretty decent deal. It's an option. It will depend on your own set of circumstances as to whether that's something you're going to want to do. But I just mentioned it because it's something that both me and Steven take advantage of.
Yeah. And it's fantastic when you can work with somebody who you really trust. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Yep. That's the end of my kind of...
Okay.
My thing.
No, that's good. I generally edit in what you call the fine detail. In fact, if you're watching this on video, that's what you've been seeing me do. There are some exceptions to that. So, and we'll get into that. I sort of use a little bit of a mixed method where it is fine detail, but if someone goes off on a rant, I basically leave that intact unless there's any obvious ums and ahs or mouth noises that I need to get rid of.
You see, that's the difference between me and you. Like, if I'm sitting down and I'm going to listen, I'm listening to every single thing. I'm not saying that one of us is right, one of us is wrong, but that's just a big difference. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, if I wasn't able to do the note-taking edit, that's how I would edit upgrade, is the way that you're talking about here. But because I basically take my edit notes as I go, I do it that way.
We definitely agree on the simple thing is, when you're starting out, keep your editing simple, keep it light, unless the format of your show really demands it. I think that's the one place that we agree.
Yeah.
Because you can spend so much time in the edit suite doing things that you never actually publish the show.
Yep.
If you've spent time on your recording and your microphone technique and all of that stuff, then you'll have less egregious things to deal with in the first place.
Listen to it and edit it as you go, but don't try and make it meticulously perfect. They're kind of like the two things we would recommend that you do when you're starting. Listen to it so you know how the show sounds, you know how to make it better because you've become a listener of the show. But don't spend hours and hours and hours and hours trying to make it the most perfect thing that it can be, because unless you, for some reason, really love that, which you might, it might be your thing, and if it is, go for it, it's going to end up becoming a chore for you, which is not fun. Should we get to some questions from listeners?
Sounds good to me.
Josh asks, how do you handle syncing up host tracks? My co-hosts and I have been doing sync pops and checking them against a mixed down recording of our call. It works well, but our backgrounds are all in video editing, so that's just how we're used to it. I'm wondering if there's a more efficient way to do it.
That's a pretty efficient way to do it.
That's the way to do it, from my experience.
So what Josh is talking about is you either count in and hit record all at once, or you have a 3-2-1 clap or something to mark that everyone is recording at the same time. And then you take the mixed down recording of the call. So if you're using something like Ecamm Call Recorder, you have in Logic or whatever you're editing, you have Mike's track, my track and then the Skype call track, and I can line them up. That's the best way for most people to do it. I generally don't rely on the Skype call, if hardly ever, but if you count in and all hit record at once, it's all going to be pretty close. Now, the danger in this and anything talking about syncing is something called drift. And for a long time, I had the worst drift problems on Connected with Federico. And I don't know why, but it's where the files were in sync at the beginning, but over the course of a 2-hour recording, one stretches out to be a little bit longer or be a little bit shorter. And that has to do with internal clocks of computers, lots of voodoo, it seems like to me. But just because something is in sync at the beginning doesn't mean it's in sync at the end. So if you're not doing a full listen edit, you're just doing maybe the timestamp method that Mike mentioned, you need to make sure that you are listening to chunks of it, especially in conversations where people go back and forth rapidly, because if they're out of sync, even by a little bit, it's going to mangle the conversation.
And in my opinion, the best way to make sure that this is the case is to have a sync track, like a Skype track, that you're cutting and moving around of all of the other edits. So not only can you hear it's correct, you can actually match it up with the waveforms in the edit suite and make sure it's correct. This is one of the things where we fundamentally disagree. Where I can't believe that Steven edits without a sync track there constantly, and he feels like I'm wild to need that. So
yeah, we're different people.
Clemens asks, what is an appropriate noise level in decibels or minus decibels? I don't really know what the difference is there, to record or process at. When should one apply plugins such as a noise gate, compressor, or EQ, recording versus editing? Which plugins do you use and which settings?
Oh, I have so many things to say about this. First of all, first of all, never apply plugins during the recording session. Because if something goes wrong or you want to change it, too late. You've already laid down the file. So if you use Audio Hijack to record, Audio Hijack has a compressor and noise gate and all sorts of stuff in it. But if you bake all that into your recording, you can't do anything about it later. So I never... It's in capital letters in our Google Doc.
There's no reason.
Don't do it.
I cannot think of any reason why you would need to do this.
Don't do it.
Why would you need to do this? I don't get it.
Mm-mm. Don't do it.
Like, why would you ever need to put a compressor to the recorded audio when it's so easy to do it afterwards? I don't know why people do this.
That's right. And if you're listening, just mention things like noise gate, compressor, or EQ. Those are three basic ways to manipulate audio. Noise gate listens for quiet noise in the background. Often you have to sample it, and something I use Audition for this, but you sample it and then it listens for that across the file and just removes it. A noise gate is fine, but if it's too aggressive, everyone sounds like they're recording in a bathtub. Like, it can take out a bunch of the richness of the sound.
I think that's the difference. There is a slight difference between noise gate and noise reduction, because you've mentioned like both of them now, right? Like, noise reduction is where you're removing it. Noise gate is when it's clear. It's basically reducing the audio on anything up to a certain decibel level.
Yes, you've corrected me. What if I just go back and redo it? Let's go back and redo it.
Or you could just make it sound like I'm the smart one for once.
Okay.
You know, it's up to you.
We'll do
really.
That. So I describe noise reduction.
Uh-huh.
A noise gate, like Mike said, is a level where any sound beneath that volume level is cut.
Mm-hmm.
The danger with a noise gate is if someone sort of trails off a sentence like this and they fall below the noise gate, it's going to cut them.
Also, a noise gate, with noise gates and noise reduction, they are always last resorts. You should only ever use these things if there was nothing you could do beforehand to stop there being background noise. Because when you do this, you end up with one of two situations. You do a noise reduction on it, which is where you're running it against a sample, and you are left with audio that doesn't sound as good because an amount of clarity has been taken out of the audio. It doesn't matter what you do or what app you use. I can always hear it when I end up with a process file. And a noise gate, it's only removing the noise when the person is not talking. When they start talking again, if they've got like an air conditioner in the background, you can hear the air conditioner. And then when they stop talking, cuts, and you don't hear it anymore. So, like, even in editing, these things are not ideal. These things should only be used when you don't have another option. You shouldn't record thinking, oh, I'll just remove the noise of that fan afterwards. No, turn the fan off before you start recording. That's my advice.
Tell your guest to turn the fan off.
you will always end up with worse sounding audio if you're doing one of these things.
That's right.
But we're still anyway, to get back to this question, so that was part one, right? Also, compressors are where you increase the volume, right? Is that right? And you can do a bunch of weird stuff with compressors. I've never understood compressors, honestly.
So a compressor does two things. It brings up the volume of the quiet parts of the track and brings down or compresses the louder parts of the track. And so it's compressing the dynamic range of volume on the track. So if someone talks really loud, but then they also talk really quietly, a compressor can help even that out. It's not a cure-all, but it can be a useful tool. And there's lots of settings. The reason I started using Logic is that I actually really like the way Logic's default compressor works, and I tweak very little from that. That's just my personal taste.
Right.
You hear Logic's compressor on almost everything that I edit, because I basically use it out of the box with very few tweaks.
And then EQ is just changing the sound profile, so you're making it something more bassy or whatever.
Yes, or in Federico's case, less bassy.
Yeah.
I take a little low end out of Federico.
I'm sure he's not happy about that.
Yeah. Well, he'll be fine.
I'm just going to say it now. I think it's going to come up later on. I do not use a compressor or any EQ settings on any of the podcasts I record. So if you listen to my shows and you think they sound good, there you go. Make sure you have decent microphone equipment. Mm-hmm. That is the best thing I can tell you. I do nothing. I do absolutely nothing else. Nobody complains. I have not had a complaint about the audio of my shows in I don't even know how many years. But I don't do anything. I only do one thing, which is the thing you're about to explain.
Yes, is volume matching. So this was the question, what's the appropriate noise level to record or process at? I have found it very difficult over my career to have a consistent recording level from people, because people all use different microphones, different equipment. Some people are naturally louder than others. During our recording episode, you can go back and listen to that. We talked about things like peaking. You don't want to max it out. So I'd rather have a track that's a little too quiet than too hot, because it's harder to fix that. This is one of those things, like everything else we're talking about, that there's a bunch of different thoughts and a bunch of different answers out there. What we settled on was matching volume at about minus 16. And so this is all very, like, it's so complicated to understand, let alone explain. And I don't understand it well enough to explain it well.
We just found these online and they work great.
But they work great. So we use Audition to do this. Audition does a really good job at matching volume.
Very fast.
Very fast. It does a very clean job of it. So we matched to minus 16. It's called LUFS, and basically
Lufs.
Luffaloons. Luffalators. Minus 16 luffalators. And what this is looking at is basically the volume level of a track, but it's based on how loud it actually sounds. So like there's a lot of weirdness in audio about, oh, I'm going to bring this down minus 2B or minus 4 dB or whatever. But to the human ear, it sounds half as quiet. Because the way the human ear works and the way Logic works are different. So anyways, we matched to minus 16. There's some other settings in here that Audition has. Again, every article I've read online has different suggestions. Some people think our shows are a little too quiet. I've never thought that, so I've never changed this. But
no one's ever said that to me.
But for instance, remember Subnet, the show, the Daily Tech show I did for like a year? That was at minus 12. Because minus 16 was too quiet on the Echo. And it turns out that Amazon has a requirement that you're at minus 12, which is way louder than what we normally do.
Welcome to Subnet!
Yeah, super loud. Super loud out of context. It made me uncomfortable to edit it. I finally kind of got used to it, but it was very strange. But as you'll see in the video, I do this in Audition and then go chop up the show in Logic because I don't like editing in Audition. Personal taste. Dr. Wilco asks, what is the ratio of recorded audio to editing time? What factors change that for better or for worse? How much have you been able to streamline it over the years?
So I'll give like my two kind of, I edit more than just Upgrade and Cortex, but they're my best examples. I don't really edit that much more than those anymore. So when I'm doing my note-taking edits, it's for Upgrade, which is the most complex of those. It's about half the time of the recording. So if we record for 2 hours, it would take me maybe an hour to an hour and a half, dependent sometimes. But it's like kind of like 0.5 to 0.75 of the time. Cortex is 3 hours to every hour at least.
Wow.
At least. Sometimes it's more.
And just to provide some detail on that, is that because you're going through and cutting things that you wouldn't cut out of other shows? Like, why the additional time?
Because it's so much heavier. Like, I'm editing for content and editing for quality, which I don't do in such large strokes for any other show. And, like, we're talking thousands of cuts in Logic, right, is what I'm doing here. I'm, like, stitching sentences together, stitching words together. It is really, really, really intense of an edit. That's just what I've done for the show and we'll keep doing, but it takes about 3 hours to every hour at least to edit the show.
For me, connected is probably, it's definitely slower than real time. It's maybe 1.5 hours for every hour, maybe not quite that much. But again, I do a full listen. There are times on Connected where if someone goes off on a tear about something, I will leave that intact except ums and ahs and pauses that I want to get rid of. I very rarely have to do the thing that you mentioned of stitching sentences or words together on Connected, although it does happen sometimes. Connected also has the additional work that it's three people. And when you have just two people, things go faster because it's less to listen to and line up. And if you have timing issues, it's way simpler with just two people. And crosstalk. So when someone interrupts somebody, or what happens a lot is they start their sentence while the other person is ending their sentence. And on Connected, I almost always pull those apart when I can. Sometimes it's not possible because, for instance, I'm going to pick on you a little bit. You do this a lot to Federico, where Federico will be talking and then you sort of pick up, and Federico does a thing where he'll just end his sentence a word early and I can't manufacture a word. So I've got to leave the overlap in a little bit.
Yeah, I've developed bad habits with certain people, and that, you know, it's just what happens in conversation over time. And I know I have that habit with Federico.
Yeah. So I try to do what I can with those. The other shows, you know, Ungenius is definitely slower than real time. If you've listened to Ungenius, we've talked about it here. It's scripted, it's edited basically like Cortex is, but thank God it's an 8-minute show and not a 2-hour show. There's no ums or ahs. I very often stitch words together on Ungenius because we'll redo a take and the first half of the word and the first take and the second half of the word and the second take is better and I put them together. So Ungenius, for an 8-minute show, it may take me 45 minutes to edit. So the ratio is about the same, but just a much smaller sample size, thank goodness. And then Liftoff and Flashback are kind of in the middle. I'm basically just assembling it and taking out anything super egregious.
Molly's asks, what is the worst editing mistake that you've ever made?
One time on Connected, early on when I took over the edit from you, I had the issue of drift and I didn't catch it. And so Federico answered a question before he was asked it. And I got a bunch of tweets about that and I had to go in and fix it and re-release it.
Yeah. I remember that was a...
He's a wizard!
The transition was a little rocky. That was difficult for you, I know that, and I will always appreciate that you took it away, because Connected is a hard edit. It is, because it's three people. Adding extra people in exponentially increases the amount of work. It's not one-to-one. It really isn't. And so there can be some stuff there. I can't think of something that was, like, particular that stands out. Like, I've made all of the errors that anybody's ever made, like that one. I know I've misaligned people. I've cut things poorly, left things in I was supposed to cut out, but like nothing like, wow, I can't believe I did that. There was once, I kind of count this in the edit, like I read the ads in Cortex afterwards, So I could kind of consider them as part of the edit. And one time I read a sponsor and then halfway through started calling the sponsor by another sponsor's name.
I remember that.
Which was very fun. And everyone was cool with it, but it was very embarrassing.
That was fun.
No, it wasn't. Matt asks, what is it like to work with a dedicated editor rather than editing your own show? What goes into the decision to go that route versus editing it yourself?
I only have one example of this. So Jim Metzendorf edits a lot of stuff on Relay and elsewhere. He's absolutely fantastic. He took over Mac Power Users from me. So when I joined MPU 2 years ago, it was being edited by somebody else, not Jim. And I wanted to take over the edit when I joined the show to really get a feel of the show. The best way to understand what a podcast is to edit it. Not being on it, editing it. And so I edited MPU for almost a year, I think almost exactly a year. And it got to a point for me where I felt comfortable with where the show was and my place in the show. Because it's very hard coming into a pre-existing show. Joining MPU is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my career. Like, joining a show that's got 10 years of history, very, very difficult. And so for me, it was, the show with me and David on is up and running, and I'm comfortable with how it's going. And it was really a time issue where I was really getting to a point because of other projects that editing MPU was just too much of a task for me. And MPU, if you listen, has a lot of guests, which really makes the editing work take longer because, unlike Connected, where I know what I'm going to get from you and Federico every week as far as audio quality, guests are all over the map. And so you're kind of rebuilding the whole thing every week.
Yeah.
And so it was that, it was time, and honestly, Jim is a fantastic editor and is better equipped to deal with those guest issues than I ever was. And so for me, it was an upgrade for MPU for Jim to take it over.
I edit the Pen Addict, but the Pen Addict's really easy. So like if we record for an hour, I'm done with it in like 20 minutes. But if we have a guest, sometimes I'll just give it to Jim because we have a lot of guests on the Pen Addict that don't have podcast gear, so they're just using whatever they can get their hands on. And so I will typically just say, hey, Jim, can you do this one for me? Because he is way better at making subpar audio sound good than I am. But for me, like, most of my shows are not edited by me anymore. Jim edits Analog, Remaster, and the Test Drivers. You edit Connected and Ungeniused. And Dan Provost edits Thoroughly Considered. And for me, it's because if I had to edit those shows, I wouldn't be able to do them anymore. This is the time thing. I unfortunately don't have the time. And also, I get RSI pains, and I physically could not edit that amount of shows anymore. I used to do all of them, but I don't anymore. And it's about finding someone that you trust, who you're happy to work with. And we've been lucky to find someone with Jim's quality, and he works with us on a bunch of shows. He edits more shows on Relay FM than even those. He edits lots of shows that me and you are not on, and does a fantastic job. So it's a difficult thing because you got to leave it in somebody's hands. You know, like Jim gives me back a file, and I have to just hope that he got it right if I don't want to listen to the whole thing. So like sometimes I'll do that, but most of the time, I am not able to do that. So I have to trust that he's done it. And, you know, that's a long-term thing, and you build that trust with people over time.
That's right.
Ben asks, what is your least favorite part of editing a podcast, and what do you do to make it more enjoyable and less of a chore, if it ever is a chore?
It can be a chore. For me, it's especially with Connected, it's just the hours-long single task ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
So we record Connected... I'll use Central Time. We record at 12 on Wednesdays. We're generally off the call by 2 or 2:30, and the show's generally up by 5 or 5:30. And so it is a whole workday to do Connected. And for me, it not only limits what else I can get done on Wednesdays, but it's also, I don't know, maybe I got something going on, but I find it can be difficult to really stay on that one task for hours at a time. Generally, the way that I work is bouncing around between different things, and I can't do that when I'm editing. You'd be surprised how many times I try to go to music and like play music while I'm editing a podcast. Like, wait, dummy, you can't What's do that. Wrong with you? I don't know. Something's wrong in my brain.
Just play it really quietly, I guess.
It'd be very confusing. But for me, to make it more enjoyable and why I continue to do it is that I get to help craft the show. And on Connected, over time, I've made the edit more and more of a character. So if you listen to Connected, you'll hear on a pretty regular basis jokes or Easter eggs or sound effects. I drop things in from time to time to make the show more fun. And I love being able to do that when it's possible.
And that is Edit's Choice.
That's right.
That's what we call that. Editor wins. Editor always wins because they're putting the time in.
There's a question further down that asks about that.
No, I want to find that question because we may as well just answer that now.
Yes.
But I can't find it. Why can't I find this question? I know it's in here somewhere.
I don't know. There was a question. I'm sorry if we don't know where it went. It was in here. I don't know what happened. Oh, here it is, by Alex.
Great.
How do you handle cutting content when hosts disagree about whether it's worth including in the show? I assume I have full control.
The editor has the final say.
That's right. Now, I'm not a dictator, and so there are times where, just because we're talking about Connected, where you or Federico are like, hey, I'd like to cut that. Yeah, absolutely, I'll do that, because you want it gone. But mm-hmm. there's also times where I cut things, but I don't ask permission. And so I've cut whole conversations or rabbit holes or rearranged things, and I feel like I know that y'all trust me with that. And if it was something big, I'd go and ask. But at the end of the day, I feel like it's up to me to make that sort of final decision.
I'm not putting the time in. If I want to tell you how to edit the show, I'll take the edit back.
Which means when you do say, hey, that should be cut, then that I know that you really mean that.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to listen to that.
Sometimes Stephen makes jokes that need to be cut and I have to tell
it's
him.
Not always that.
It is... quite a bit of the time. The only time I ever say you should cut that is like, you can't keep that joking.
So Mike, I know with Cortex, you and Gray both take a turn at the editing. We had a couple questions about that. Patrick asked, what program do you recommend for editing when you have more than one person editing an episode? And Chemical Sora asks, what are some recommendations on a workflow for that?
All right, so my first recommendation is don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
Don't do it. Just don't do it. It adds so much complexity and uncertainty into the process.
As someone who doesn't do this, from my perspective, it would be like, if I want someone else to have input on the edit, maybe I do an edit and then they listen to it and make recommendations.
Yeah.
But the cutting is up to me. But that's not what you and Gray are doing, right?
No. So I do an edit and then I give it the entire Logic project to Gray. We use Dropbox for this. It syncs the entire project.
That scares me.
Yeah. Well, we have a system in place, right, that we work with. I do my edit, close Logic, confirm the file size, send that file size to Gray, and I will now not open that Logic project until he's done. And when he's done, he duplicates the project and renames it.
Oh.
That is how we do it, because if we open that at the same time, everything can explode. Because none of these tools are built to do this, right? Like, it's not for that, right? You have to base... There is no, like, multiple people editing this. It's kind of like you have to completely stop and then give it to the other person, right, as if they're just opening it fresh. The reason me and Gray do this is, like, it's the thing that we started out doing, and now we just always do. And it's initially, like, we were entering into this creative partnership, and I didn't edit a show to the level that Gray was editing with his other shows. So I wanted him to have a final say on the edit to make sure I cleared it up right. And then over time, that has now just developed into there are two people to make sure that this show is the best that it can be. And over a certain period of time, if everything's going well, like, if it ain't broken, why fix it, right? So that is just our process. We have been running the show for this long now. We don't introduce errors this way. You know, we both have our own checks and balances to make sure it's all good. But I don't recommend this. Like, you should do what Steven's done. If multiple people want to have input, there is one editor and everybody else can just add their own input. Like you send a mixed down file for them, they listen to it and they're like, oh, at 20 minutes this thing happened, you should change it.
Right.
Like you shouldn't have multiple people going in there because it not everybody's going to be at the same technical level. Don't tell him, but I'm a better editor than Gray now. Right. So when he gives me the file back, I'll tweak some of the edits that he's made because he edits differently to me. And I've put in thousands of hours now. Like I'm pretty good at this. And also now at this point, he actually doesn't really edit that much anymore. Gray is mostly just listening, and he now will just pick up things that are wrong. But when we were starting out, he was making as many cuts as I was because I still needed to feel out how the show was supposed to sound. So it was a very specific set of circumstances that led to the way that we edit Cortex. I don't recommend anybody follow our example.
I agree. Don't be like Mike.
Don't. It's not, this is one thing where I just really, really recommend that you don't do it.
Let's finish with this question from Zach. They ask, what considerations do you make when deciding on the style of editing for a show? The Test Drivers and Upgrade are both shows talking about tech, but they feel pretty different in the edit.
The reason those shows sound different in the edit is because they're edited by different people. Right? Jim edits the Test Drivers. But even when I was editing the Test Drivers, which I was at the beginning, it was just a choice. Like the shows have a different feel. They have a different attitude to them. Like we have music beds for the ads, like going in and out of that. It's just, these are just stylistic choices that I feel made sense for those shows. And it's like, I think this is the thing that comes with practice and time and experience, is that you kind of get a feel for how you want something to sound and you make different considerations for it that way.
Yeah, I think part of this too is it can change over time, you know, or if a show like Upgrade, where you guys didn't necessarily start with all these structured different segments, but you've done it over time and they all have taken on their own personality. So just because you make a decision on day one doesn't mean it'll be the same decision years in.
Yeah, definitely. Things have changed over time with all of them. And it changes in every part of it, from the recording to the editing. That's just how a project grows.
All right. We did it.
We did it, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if we get more questions. So we have a topic next time, which will be kind of when it comes to file hosting and website options and stuff like that. That is our next big topic. But it would not surprise me if we maybe did a follow-up to editing. So I'll say this, is if you continue to have questions about editing, send them in. Otherwise, send in questions about where and how to host your files, what websites you should be using, stuff like that. You can send those in over Twitter by using hashtag AskBackstage, in the RelayFM members Discord with the question mark AskBackstage command, or by emailing them to backstage@relay.fm. Don't forget to check out that video that Stephen has put in the show notes. It's a good companion to this, because you'll also hear what it sounds like to actually make this episode, because you will hear all of the times that we mess up, and that might be of help to you, or maybe you'll just find it entertaining. So until next time, when we ask you to come backstage with us, I'm Mike Hurley, and he's Stephen Hackett. Say goodbye, Stephen.
Bye, y'all.